Well, good evening and greetings in Jesus' name. It's a blessing to be here. Dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle, I'm not sure which word is right. I think it was in the bulletin as dealing with the stresses, and it's similar but yet different, but the word I had was pressure, so that kind of took me in the direction I'm going. July 3, 1927, Maine Central Locomotive Number 505 was in Bartlett, Maine, or New Hampshire, I'm sorry, having come in on the local from Portland, Maine the night before. The roundhouse was short on power, so the 505 was to be a helper locomotive. She was pressed into service to help with a very heavy extra. She would be put in mid-train and cut off at Crawford Station. Bob Morse and Oscar Clemens, the locomotive's engineer and fireman respectively, planned an afternoon fishing trip for when they returned to Bartlett. As the engineer Bob worked the engine to help make up the train, the throttle felt soggy. He reported it to the mechanics at the Bartlett roundhouse. They checked the loco over but could not find the problem. Bob and Oscar went back to work. Again, Bob reported the sluggish response of the 505. The shop crew brought her into the roundhouse and did everything but dump the fire and pull the boiler jacket off, which they were not equipped to do. At about 8 a.m., the 505 took her place on a westbound extra freight mid-train. The train departed at 8:30 a.m. Bob Morse was a popular man, but he pushed his locomotives to their operational limits. He was very good, and he got every bit of operational power out of the engine he was running. One trick almost all engineers had in those days was to run the loco water low. This gave the maximum amount of steam pressure and the maximum performance from the locomotive, but the engineer had to have a fireman who could handle the task. It was a dangerous dance, but Oscar Clemens had worked with Bob Morse for years and knew exactly what he was doing. At about 10 o'clock, the train passed Willie Station House. At milepost 81, about a quarter mile up the track became straight and leveled off. The 505 was traveling at 40 miles an hour under maximum pressure. Oscar turned on the injector for water, and that is when the engine exploded. The locomotive lifted clean out of the train, fracturing the connecting bar between the engine and tender, flew 60 feet into the air, turned end for end, and dropped inside and down over the bank, crushing the cab with Oscar Clemens still inside. Investigators later found that the sight glass used to measure water in the boiler was faulty. The boiler plates failed due to metal fatigue, and the soggy feeling Mr. Morse had experienced while working the yard was the boiler plates flexing. The trees in the area were all blistered. Mr. Morse's watch was found in a tree 20 feet off the ground. The water can and drinking cup were blown over a mile away. Mr. Morse survived the explosion and was thrown 500 feet back. He was found crawling towards a brook. Oscar Clemens was trapped in the wreck, still alive. Both men made it to the hospital, but both died at the same time, 6 o'clock that evening. Pressure. I like locomotives and enjoy going to Strasburg Railroad and just walking around a breathing steam engine. But as the story relates, pressure is very valuable. Without any pressure, the train got nowhere. A locomotive like the 505 has a boiler pressure of about 185 pounds per square inch, which doesn't sound that impressive. But that pressure is enough to translate into 37,000 pounds of tractive force on the rails. And with that tractive force, this engine was a medium-sized locomotive in its time. But it was able to pull a train on level track of probably several thousand tons, all because of 185 pounds of pressure. But the story also highlights how that pressure out of control becomes catastrophic and deadly. Dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle. I want to reread just a few phrases through this story, and I want you to think about it, how it translates to this subject of pressures in life. And it's things that we see around us in people's lives, in our own lives. Short on power, so 505 was to be a helper locomotive. Phrases like pressed into service. The throttle felt soggy. Things weren't right. Something wasn't right. He pushed his locomotives to their operational limits. It was a dangerous dance, but he knew exactly what he was doing. Okay, we got this. We can do this. I know what I'm doing. Sight glass was faulty. metal fatigue, soggy feeling, boilerplates flexing. These kind of things ought not to be, and it resulted in catastrophe. In fact, the railroad tried to sue the engineer's wife until in the court search they realized back in records that this engine had received damage to its boiler while in service in Baldwin, Maine. They also discovered that the 505 had been reported at least 5 times the previous month for having a leaky boiler, and nothing was done. The railroad dropped the suit, and then his wife turned around and countersued and won. The subject tonight is maybe not one that we go to the scriptures right away for. We like to think of practical things that we can do. We want to hear suggestions for busy moms and busy dads and busy ministry and all this. And the Bible does not necessarily give us a lot of just practical everyday things, but it gives us a lot of principles. And God has given us this gift called common sense. He has given us this ability to look at our lives and make some sensible decisions. Proverbs tells us, ponder the path of thy feet and let all thy ways be established. God has given us the responsibility to just stop and take a look at our life and say, how are things going? What direction am I going? He says, turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Figure out a good path for your feet and remove thy foot from evil. Now tonight I'll probably talk out both sides of my mouth, it may seem. But I'm doing that intentionally because as you look at this subject, we can look at it and maybe we tend to go to one ditch or the other. And what those ditches are is that it's all everybody else's fault and it's all life's fault, or it's all my responsibility. And we need to look at both of those because there needs to be this tension, because with tension comes balance, and we need to find balance in this because we can fall out on either ditch. We cannot look at everybody's situation this evening and come up with a 5-step plan to reduce stress in your life, or a 10-step plan, or a 15-step plan, or a 20-step, 30-step, 40-step, because number one, all of our lives are full of lots of little details, and we don't have time to even go over all the details of my life, and we switch down to Virgil's life, and we've got a whole other set of problems to deal with. Okay? So, that's the fallacy of looking at things too practically. But I hope tonight that we look at some principles from God's Word, get our minds going, we can think about it, and chart a course in our life that will not lead to a catastrophic ending, like the lives of the engineer and the fireman and the locomotive, but a path that's profitable and a blessing to the kingdom of God and to those around us. Let's think about the title a little bit. Dealing with the pressure, and I'm going to use the word pressure because that's what I had written down, and that's where my mind was going. Dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle. Dealing. Now, what are dealings? We talk about, well, business dealings or his dealings. What do you do when you deal? Well, we talk about in a business deal, and we talk about bringing things to the table, okay? Life brings things to our table, okay? We find ourselves here in life, and things happen to us. Now, what does the word dealing imply? Well, it implies that this is a two-way thing. This is a transaction. If you look at the word dealing, it talks about transactions. When you do a transaction, there's two parties, okay? So I want us to think about this, that life has brought something to our table. You know what it is in your life. The responsibilities, the schedules, everything has been brought to your table. And you're on the other side of the table. We're here to deal with it, okay? What does that mean? That means that I can take some personal responsibility with the direction we're going. Life has brought its stuff to the table, and it's up to us to deal with it. And when we make a business dealing, sometimes there's compromise. Sometimes life wins out, sometimes I win out. Pressures. What are pressures? Well, pressures come in many different ways. Pressures can come in schedules. Pressures can come in mental stresses. We have to deal with pressures from our children. There's peer pressure we talk about. All these pressures press in upon us and want to cause us to move in a certain direction. There's a pressure of schedule. Sometimes life is just busy. We have one appointment after another, and the week is full, and it's the busy season at work. And it's like, will it ever stop? And can I ever just stop and take an afternoon and walk through the woods? Children are sick. And the school program is this weekend, and the girls' dresses still haven't gotten started being sewed. You all know what it's like. It's different for all of us. What makes us busy? Coming to the next word in our title, dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle. And I have an idea, whoever put this title, this subject in the box or on the slate or whatever, I have a good idea that he was frustrated with life. I don't know why I think that. But isn't that how we are? We're like sick and tired of busyness. We're just sick and tired of it. What can we do to change it? And if you're looking to me tonight to tell you how we're just going to reduce everybody's stress down and we're just going to have a nice, easy life, it's not going to happen tonight. We're not going to go there. And we'll see why in a bit. Why are we busy, though? You know, isn't it irritating? I don't know. Maybe you brethren at Providence don't do this after church. It is, well, so you busy at work? And we want to say, yeah, wow, it's good to be busy. And we smile and we feel pretty good that we were busy at work because doesn't it a little ego in there? Like, we were busy. And we don't want to say, well, it's actually kind of slow and I like it that way. Because somehow in our culture, we feel like busyness is where it's at. Why are we busy? In Isaiah, God posed the question, wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? What are you doing in life that makes you so busy? Did you ever stop and think about that? Like, why are we so busy? And we have to think about that, because that's one of the things we need to do in analyzing our life and pondering the path of our feet. And stop, wait a minute, what is going on? Like, we're stressed out, we're busy, what? Start writing things down and start analyzing. And we'll look at that a little bit later as well. And the last word, lifestyle, I almost laughed. I did laugh, actually, because what do you think of, and I'm not blasting who wrote the title, very good title, but I had to think about this, a busy lifestyle. What is a lifestyle? Isn't it something you choose? Maybe I'm just different, but I think to me, if it would read dealing with the pressures of a busy life sounds different than dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle. You know what I mean? And that's a little tiff on words there. But a lifestyle, the dictionary says, is a style of living that reflects the attitudes and values of a person or group. So whose fault is it that we're busy? Well, we like to point the finger somewhere else, right? And that's true. Life brings things to us that it just throws us in through the ringer, we say sometimes. But there's sometimes we make ourselves busy. We went and bought the property, and now we have a mortgage to buy, and so we got to work to pay this dumb thing off. Because we wanted it. Because we wanted a nice property, or we wanted a nice vehicle, or we wanted put it in there. But the Bible talks about it. Told Daniel, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book. Even to the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Nahum talks about chariots raging in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches, and they shall run like lightnings. And that's where we're at today. Life is busy. So I have five main points tonight. And I put these points out of the story of the steam locomotive that exploded. Or just thinking about a steam engine. Number one, you were made for service. And these are things that we need to remember as we analyze our lives, what are we gonna do with our busy lifestyle? Number one, you were made for service. Number 505 was a 280 wheel configuration. They call them consolidations. This particular railroad called them Class W's, but they were built by the American Locomotive Works for the railroad. Okay, it was there to serve a purpose. The railroad bought the steam engine, put it into service to haul freight. Who are you and why are you here? 1 Corinthians 6:20, for ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Now I want to ask you something. How do you do something to the glory of God? What does it mean that what I just did was to the glory of God? So we say these things so often, like, well, whatever you do, do the glory of God. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that look like? What does a person's life look like that is doing their life, their work, everything to the glory of God? Isn't it simply that God is pleased? He talks about in Hebrews about the heroes of faith, how that God was not ashamed to be called their God. So can you imagine God walking through Lebanon County? Is this Lebanon County yet? Dauphin County, Lancaster, Berks, all walking through, and he said, there's one of my children, look at him. See, that's what he did to Satan. He said, have you considered Job? Why? Because Job was glorifying God in his life. And God, I'm going to say God was proud of him. You know what I mean. God was not ashamed. He said, there's one of my children. Everything he was doing in his life, God was pleased and said, I like that. I like what you're doing. So we need to look at our life. The things that I'm filling my life with, just because God say, I'm glad, I like to see him doing that. And I'm going to suggest tonight that it's not just that we are, I want to be careful how I say this, but maybe sometimes we get the feeling like we always need to be busy directly with kingdom things. You know, like we can't go, like if we go to work for the day, that somehow that's not quite as good as just going to the mission field for a day, okay? But in whatever we do, the things we do are glorifying to God. Maybe it's even a hobby in its place, but God said, I like to see him doing that because he's being creative with the talents I gave to him. And he's enjoying this creation that I created. Why was I created? You know, even before there was the kingdom of heaven, so to speak, God created the world. And I like to think about that sometimes. You know, we think about serving Christ and the church and everything, and that's good. But way back in the beginning, God just created us. Why? Why did God make a world and put people in it? Because he just enjoyed life. So it's okay to just enjoy life, but we need priorities. We'll look at that a little bit later too. Why are we here again? Ecclesiastes said that to fear God and keep his commandments is the whole duty of man. It's one reason. We have responsibilities in the church. We have responsibilities as parents that we need to fulfill. As Christians, James says pure religion is what? Visit fatherless and widows, serving other people, people that are needy, hurting, and to keep himself unspotted. To be that person that God is not ashamed to be called his God. Why are you busy? Are you pleasing your owner? Are you doing what you were created to do? You know, if the locomotive didn't pull the train, what a disappointment. There they spent however many thousand it was in 1920s for a worthless piece of iron. Are you pleasing your owner? Number two, we need to remember that without pressure, you are worthless. The steam locomotive, without a fire, without water in the boiler, without 185 pounds of pressure in that boiler, is worthless. You can go all across America and there are steam engines sitting in parks and museums and they're worthless, except to look at. Other than that, they're worthless. Without the pressure. Yesterday, I was working on a furniture project. So I hooked up the air nailer to the air tank. I'm shooting nails. Without 90, 100 pounds of pressure in the air compressor, it's worthless. You can go all you want and it won't do anything. There's no pressure there. I remember when I was a young man, I don't remember how old I was, but I was where I was working in the furniture finishing shop. I had been there several years, and of course you work your way up, and then I was supposed to be the foreman of the shop and keep everybody working and things flowing, and I didn't enjoy that responsibility. And I remember going into my boss and I said, I'm sick of it. I said, I just wanna go spray chairs again. Like, let someone else deal with the problem. Sometimes we get temporary help in, sometimes you just had personnel issues to deal with. And I said, I just wanna go back and spray furniture. He said, no, he said, you thrive under pressure. And I looked at him like, you don't know what you're talking about. See, I thought that thriving meant that I enjoyed pressure. That's not what he meant by thriving. He knew that when there was pressure there, that Durbin got up and did something. And that's how, well, I don't know how you are, but that's how I am. Because I knew that tonight I had to preach a message. Therefore, sometime between Wednesday, Thursday, this thing's got to get done. Okay? Because there was a deadline. We don't do well without pressure. Oh, we'd love a life where we just da-da-da-da-da, but we'd be pretty much worthless. I thought also of plants in a greenhouse. I hope I don't show my ignorance, but I think in a greenhouse, sometimes you shake, you get a little air going on the plants. Is that right, Jonathan? Because you can't take a plant in a sterile environment and plant it in the garden and expect it to survive. It needs a little pressure. It needs some negative influence in its life. Why? To start making a strong stem. But we kick and we resist. And as young people especially, we grow up, we want to get married, we just have all kinds of freedom. And then children come and it's like, well, oh, we think, well, okay, so we'll raise our children, and once they get up to about 10, 12, and teenagers, they can start taking care of themselves, and then we'll go back to, well, no, you don't. You just don't go back there. Because God has other plans for us. So just stop resisting and accept the pressures that come. I thought it's interesting, I don't know where I heard this, but in the Jewish culture, there's no such thing as an adolescence. Okay? We talk about teenagers and adolescents and that, and sorry teenagers, but there is nothing like that in Jewish community. You are either a child or a man. 12 years old, you become a man. That's foreign to us. See, we want that section of life where it's all privileges and no responsibilities. And that's what America wants. Give me all the privileges. Oh, no responsibility. No. Someone else, the millionaires, can take care of the responsibilities. Just let me have everything free. Okay? God told Job, he said, gird up your loins like a man. I'll have some questions for you and I want some answers. God expects us to be men and women. Stand up to the responsibilities we have. Ezekiel 22, "And I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should destroy it not, but I found none." There was no one responsible enough to stand up and help God. And Isaiah heard the voice of God saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here am I, send me." Isaiah was ready to step up and take the responsibility. Galatians 6:9, "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." And in Corinthians, Paul was talking about giving there in 2 Corinthians, I forget the chapter, but he said, "He that sows sparingly is also going to reap sparingly." And we have to understand that if we want to just not put very much at all into life, we're not going to get a whole lot out of it. It's a life principle that we can't get away from. No pressure, no results. So look at the pressure in your life and ask yourself, is it productive? Does God want to use this pressure to make us productive in His kingdom, in our lives? Number three, take the controls. Every steam engine has controls. And a steam engine is powered by fire, and you have a fireman, and his responsibility is to build a fire and to keep the fire where it needs to be in order to heat the water. He needs to understand the terrain he's going through. He needs to understand how much heat the boiler's pulling off the fire, how much he needs to shovel. Is the train going upgrade? Is it going downgrade? Slow the fire down. You watch the gauges. And you also have an engineer, and his responsibility is to control the water. And then he controls the valves to make the steam engine do what it's supposed to do. So these pressures will come, but it's up to us to take the controls. What are we going to do with the pressures? What are the controls in our life? Like I said before, some pressures we bring on ourselves and other pressures just come. In our own experience, so it rains 7 inches and the creek rises and the water comes and the house is flooded. Couldn't do a thing about it. That's a pressure that comes sometimes, a natural disaster. But it's just up to us then, how are we going to relate to it? How are we going to keep that from taking us under? I think it's interesting. When you get in situations like that, you become very focused. I look back at that. I mean, that happened in August, and so from August to January, we repaired the studio, remodeled the house, went through the busy season of our business, and we got ordained. And I'm not saying that to lift ourselves up in any way, but I'm just marvel at how we can go through that. And I believe it's something that God has built into us. In hard situations, we become very focused, where you just, okay, what needs to be done? And you do that, and then you go to the next thing, okay? And I believe in the grace of God as well to help us through those times. But what were we doing? Just going from, sometimes we say, from one little fire to the next. There are things you have to lay aside, you have to forget about. What are some other ways? Probably one of the biggest things that I thought about as I thought about taking control, taking personal responsibility, is learning to say no. And I'm going to do this. I want everybody to say no with me, all right? Are you ready? 1, 2, 3.
No.
So was that hard? Tuesday afternoon it'll be hard. Why? Because I need to be the hero. I need to be the person that they're like, wow, thanks a lot for doing that. And you went home and were ready to... What were you ready to do? Pride keeps us from saying that two-letter word, no. I mean, you can add in, I'm sorry with it. I'm sorry. No, I can't. Okay? Now, here again, we need that balance, because I know for a fact it's a tendency sometimes for me, and there's people in my life that I look at and say, I think they could have done that. right? And there's sometimes we don't want to do it, and we say, well, no, I'm sorry. We were going to go do something. Yeah, we were going to go shopping. Or so we've got to balance this. But there are times when you say, no, I'm sorry, I can't. And that's tough. When you're a man and you're in business and your whole drive is to please customers and we want to take it on. Some of us probably feed more on what people think of us than other people. We feed on other people's praise and we want to please people. So we take it on and then we kick ourselves. And why in the world did I take this on yet? My family's suffering, I'm suffering, I'm snapping, I'm short. All because I didn't say no. Prioritize. Do you know what prioritize means? That means like do the thing that's important. Look for the things you can control. Sure, there are things out of our control in life, but look for the things you can. Get the thing done that's important. In other words, we have to understand that sometimes things will get left in the dirt. And it's okay. And that's hard because I've seen it in my own life, you know, as a young person, you had all these goals and dreams that you want to do. And you into married life and you want to hang on to this, you want to hang on to that, and you got this project and that. And after a while, life gets too busy and you can't. That some of your hobbies just have to kind of, they're gone. Why? Because more important things came into your life. The other thing we need to think about is delegation. Maybe someone else can do this. Maybe it's a good thing that someone's asking you to do, but you know already that you have all these good things that you're doing. How do you know if you should drop this and do that? And I thought of the story in Acts there when the widows were being neglected, the apostles came and said, you know what, this don't make sense. It doesn't make sense that we should leave off preaching and be burdened with all this work over here. You get your heads together and get 7 deacons to deal with that, and we're going to go stay over here and preach the word, okay? Sometimes we need to think about that. Maybe Peter could have pulled off a fellowship meal, but no, he had more important things to do. Delegate. Take the controls that we have. Number 4, the importance of a relief valve. Every steam engine, every pressure tank has a safety mechanism called a relief valve. What's that for? When the pressure gets too high, it's supposed to blow and let off pressure, relieve pressure. Do we have a relief valve? Yeah, we probably do, but maybe it's not always a Christian relief valve. You know, we talk about letting it start blowing off. How does a Christian blow off? Several verses to think about. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. We have a relief valve of prayer, okay? I say, well, what is that? You know, that's kind of trite. You know, pray and all your pressures go away. Well, in all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy paths. Casting all your care upon him for he careth for you. Yeah, you go into your office and you fall down on your knees and say, God, I can't take it anymore. I don't know what to do. And just a personal testimony, I know how it is at the beginning of the week. You look at the schedule. And it's probably my fault because I scheduled too many things, too many shoots and projects in 1 week. And you dump it out, and 2 hours later the phone rings like, hey, I'm sorry, the furniture's not going to be ready. I hope it's okay. It's like, sure, thanks a lot. You know, you're relieved. God knows how to take an impossible week and make it possible. Just happened to us a couple weeks ago. And it was things where you made schedules here, you made it there and there, and then afterwards you stopped and looked like, wait a minute, you mean we scheduled all that in this week? Well, I was dumb. because, you know, family time would suffer, and don't you know, someone called and canceled something, and it's like, oh, what a relief. Never underestimate the power of prayer. And remember, prayer is more than fancy words or properly orchestrated dialogue. I don't know how you find prayer, but sometimes it's hard to know how to articulate everything. I was blessed with something that somebody put on a status once. They said, it's better to pray poorly than to not pray at all. And I believe the longer I live, the more I believe that prayer is probably more a condition of our heart than what we actually can say. Like, we feel like maybe we ought to be able to just pray the right words, and the burden just lifts. It doesn't always happen that way for me, I guess. But have you really dumped it on God? Have you really cast your care? Like, you don't cast your care by saying just the right words. You cast your care by... Is there anything I can throw here? If I would cast my Bible, you know where it would land. And that's tough. That means, like, taking it out of your mind, off of your... taking that level of importance and dropping it down here where it don't matter to you anymore. Like, it's God's deal. And that's really hard, because we want to figure out... We want to look at our week and pull the strings and figure it out. But if we let go, God can figure it out. The second relief valve is other people. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9 and 10. He says, two are better than one. Why? Because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will help the other up. But woe to him that is alone when he falls, for he hath not another to help him up. God has blessed us with brotherhood. God has blessed us with people around us. Sometimes we feel like we, you know, if we can just handle this all myself, I'm the hero. And we feel a little too self-conscious, too proud to ask for help. Say, you know what, I'm overwhelmed, I need some help. Galatians says, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. God designed that we help each other. To lift the burden off of someone who's overwhelmed. Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. Know where each other are at. Do we know when someone's on the verge of blowing up? Now, right along with that, remember, we need this balance, we need this tension. Don't assume that your agenda and program is more important than everybody else around you. And that's a temptation. You feel like, I gotta get all this done. Can you help me do this? Can you help me do this? Wait a minute. They have a life too. Let's make sure that what I need help to do actually has to get done. Back to that passage in Corinthians where Paul was talking about giving. He said, I don't mean that in our giving that one person is relieved and the other is burdened. But what did he say? That there would be an equality. Okay, so the purpose of helping each other is not so that someone gets off the hook and the other one gets dumped on, but it's so that we even things out and we can all move forward. Now, I realize that we need to be sensitive to some people can handle more than other people. But let's be careful when we lean on others that we're not leaning selfishly. Maybe there's something we need to just let go. Maybe our property doesn't need to be cleaned up right now. Maybe your mulching actually doesn't need to get done before the end of May, or put whatever in there. Maybe you actually don't need another dress zone. Maybe you can wear the one you had before. So utilize the relief valves that God has placed in your life. The things that God has designed to take the pressure off of us. God wants to be that, and God wants other people in our lives to be that. And a relief valve is no good if it's not in working order. If a relief valve fails, it doesn't do its job. Number five is scheduled maintenance. From what I read, that once a month, by law, steam engines had to be taken into the shop, fire cooled down, boilers cleaned out. In fact, it's estimated that, and then of course, above and beyond that, there was regular maintenance work on steam locomotives. Steam locomotives were very, very maintenance intensive. That was one of the shortfalls of steam locomotives. They just required a lot of maintenance. It's estimated that a steam engine was only available for actual work 35% of the time. And it's one of the reasons that diesel locomotives took over the railroad industry, because they could be utilized more like 95% of the time. Maintenance was very, very low in comparison to steam locomotives. But I want you to think about this. Everything you know requires maintenance. I get so tired of maintaining my property. I think about sometimes mowing the yard. Think about how ridiculous that is. Every week, mow it off. You know, and then we water it. And I like a nice green lawn. But maintenance, I get so tired of it. Like, you don't get anywhere. All you're doing is just keeping it there. I like, you know, forward motion. But everything requires maintenance. And we are no exception. We need to remember that we cannot operate at full throttle. You know, somehow we think we need to be efficient. We need to just go. We need to be productive. We just busy for the kingdom. And wham, boom. And then we hit a block wall and we wonder what went wrong. This is a concept that God put in place at the very beginning of time. Genesis 2, verse 2, and on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had made. It's that simple. He worked for 6 days and then he rested. Well, we don't have the Sabbath, we have the Lord's day now, and I wonder sometimes we haven't forgotten the Sabbath principle, though. I'm just saying it. Sometimes we can be pretty busy even on the seventh day. If we're not careful. I believe kingdom work's important. But God put that into motion because he knew that we needed to stop and take a break. We need maintenance. In fact, to his people, he commanded that every 7 years the land would rest. I thought about that. You know, like the seventh year, we didn't farm this year. I don't know what they did. In no garden. But on that sixth year, the Bible says that God gave them enough stuff to go through for 3 more years. Ecclesiastes 10:10 says this: if the iron be blunt and he do not whet the edge, then he must put to more strength. Oh, we don't have time to stop the sharpening. We got to keep splitting woods. We wham, wham, hit the wood. I know it's harder, but if you just stop. And we fall into that trap. We somehow think we're going to get more done if we just keep going full steam. We'll just go. Because we're going to get things done. We're going to chalk it off our list. Will we become inefficient? One writer put it this way. He said, we're running on empty. With the many demands from work, home, and church, we find ourselves stretched thin. We find ourselves in burnout. Listen to these words: unmotivated, sloppy, neglectful, short, and rude in our attitude. When we continue in our roles and in our duties, when we are dull, everyone suffers. The work suffers, our relationships suffer, we suffer. But we forget that. We think we got to keep going. Go, go, go. That's what society around us, 24/7, go, open the stores, round the clock. 7 days a week. Go, go, go. Build more, buy more, make more money. Go, build yourself, climb the ladder, get to the top. And then what? What are you going to... I thought about it. One morning I was supposed to drive to Quarryville, I think it was, to take pictures of furniture, and I was just a little bit late. Got down to 501 in Shaverstown there, and yeah, up to the traffic light, and there was a horse and an open cart with two Amish boys in it, and the light turned green, so we went up ahead, and I went out around and boom, 501. But as I went past them, I was like, you know, that's funny. They were going maybe 5 miles an hour. I wanted to go 60. But at the end of our lives, who got the most done? Didn't really matter. Remember the analogy of oxygen masks on an airplane? Do you ever fly? What do they tell you about the oxygen masks when they drop down from the ceiling? Put your own on, and then help the children and those around you. And at first, that sounds a little selfish. It's like, serve others first. Well, but what if it takes a little too long to help the other person and you conk out? See, even in Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman, whole list of things, everything she does, but in those verses, verse 17 and 22, I want you to listen to this. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She takes some time for herself. Okay? Verse 22, she maketh herself coverings of tapestry and her clothing is silk and purple. It's okay. Am I advocating selfishness? Not at all. But we have to take care of ourselves. If you're snapping at children, at your children, if you don't care about your work anymore, if you don't care if the job gets done right, you're too busy. We need to take time out, even if it is for ourselves. Psalm 4, verse 4, stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. We've forgotten how to be still sometimes. Psalm 46, 10, be still and know that I am God. How do you know that God is God? You have to stop and think about it. Meditation takes time. Connecting with God takes time. Connecting with other people takes time. And maybe it takes some people longer than others. But you know, you can't build relationships with family one evening a week. Because you're going to spend that whole evening just maybe winding down from your busyness. To wind down. And then when you're in that mood of just down and relaxed, and you start noticing your family, you start noticing what's going on in life, and then you can start talking. I know that all sounds idealistic. But we need to slow down sometimes. Why does God tell us to be still? Isaiah 30, verse 15, for thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest ye shall be saved. In quietness and confidence shall be your strength. Take time to sharpen the soul. Daily quiet time, meditation. Sunday, go to church. Wednesday evening, go to church. It's just marvelous how that sometimes you feel like, why do I have a prayer meeting tonight? Just think we get done, and you feel uptight, and you go to church, and you just forget about everything out there. And by the end of the prayer meeting service, you just feel so refreshed. Do you ever experience that? I almost feel sorry for the people that thought they were too busy and stayed home. Get away. Is that right? Is it right to just take a little trip? Just for anyhow? Just for nothing? That's a two-edged sword. Not right now, they're not into travel much, but most of the time our world is all about travel and experiencing things. Okay, that's a selfish thing. But it's okay to just get away and just do nothing for a little bit. Balance. Time. Remember, investments must be made in order to make withdrawals. We cannot withdraw from our life forever with never putting anything into it. We don't have time to look at Jesus, but I wanted to read that account where, remember, we know the story of the feeding of the 5,000. We know that verse where he said, "Come ye apart and rest a while." But you know why he said that? Because they had just experienced the death of a friend, John the Baptist. He said, "Come apart, let's rest." And they went out. I like to think about it. They went to the cabin, they got coffee, and they went out on the deck to relax. They looked over the railing, and there was 3,000 people waiting for Jesus. So he preached. He said he had compassion. He preached, and he got to the end of the day, and told his disciples, "Well, feed these people." And they're like, "Well, we can't feed them." So they had a fellowship meal, and they fed 5,000 people. And then he sent them away, and Jesus said, "Okay, you just go." And Jesus went up to the mountain to pray. He went up there, and he went alone. And he looked out, and he saw his disciples in need. So way early, I don't know if he slept that night or not, but sometime in the early wee hours of the morning, the next morning, he walked out in the water, scared them good and proper, taught them a lesson, got to the other side, pulled the boat up, and there were the people again. But he was serving. But in the middle of that, he went away alone. Dealing with the pressures of a busy lifestyle. Deal with it. This is life. That's the one ditch. The other ditch is do something about it. Take it under control. Say no. So we're saying, wait a minute, so we should accept it? Then we should say no to it? There's a tension there, right? But balance is a tension. You cannot have balance without two tensions. And tension produces order and productivity. I don't know for sure, but I'm going to say most, if not all, of our muscles in our body have an opposing force. Found that out with one of our children. She could move her arm in, but not out. Why? Because only one muscle worked. I have a niece whose eye was turned in. Why? Because only one muscle worked. It takes two muscles to hold it in limbo. That's how you have strength in our arm, because of two muscles, and they're opposing each other. I want to close with the verse in Galatians, "And let us not be weary in well-doing." Weary in what? Well-doing. "For in due season we shall reap if we faint not." What are we busy about? Let's be busy in the right things. Let's control it so that we can be a blessing to God's kingdom and those around us. Let's kneel for prayer.